learning a lot about myself is that I can look like I'm putting the oxygen mask on myself first. And in some ways I am, but I've also simultaneously convinced myself that I don't need as much oxygen as other people.
Welcome to Money Skills for Therapists, the podcast that helps therapists and health practitioners in private practice go from money confusion and shame to calm, clarity, and confidence with their finances. If you've ever felt overwhelmed by numbers or avoided looking at your business money, you're in the right place. I'm Lindsay Bonham, therapist turned money coach and creator of Money Skills for Therapists. Before we jump in, I want to remind you of something really important. Most of us highly skilled and competent therapists and health practitioners were never taught about money. Not in grad school, not in supervision, not anywhere. And yet, here we are, running businesses that need to take care of us while we're busy taking care of others. It is a lot of pressure. So if part of you feels anxious about money, avoidant, or like a bit of a hot mess financially, I want you to know that you are not alone, and I am here to help. Through my free live workshops each month, I teach practical financial skills to help you feel more grounded, calm, and confident with your private practice money. You can see what's coming up and save your spot to join live or register for the replay at moneyskillsfortherapist.com/workshops. Let's get started. Hello, and welcome back to the podcast. Today's episode is a coaching conversation with Jessica Katz. Jessica is a mental health therapist who specializes in infertility, and she's a graduate of Money Skills for Therapists from a couple years back. Today, Jessica and I talk about the challenge with her fees, having fee raise conversations, but also we quickly move into the structure of her work and just this general underlying desire to just, you know, want to preserve all relationships, right? Just not want to do anything that would like cost a relationship, you know, wanting to preserve relationships with clients at the cost to herself. This is a conversation that I think is going to resonate with a lot of folks who are at a place where you've maybe already built a niche, you are in demand, you love your clients, you've been doing the work for a while, but you're finding there's things about the way that your practice is structured that are costing you personally. Today, with a conversation with Jessica, we both think about what she needs, but we also lean into how do you work with that caretaking part of you that's really much more concerned with other people and their needs, and how do we get that part on board to make positive changes that sneakily also benefit you and your well-being. Here is my coaching conversation with Jessica Katz. So Jessica, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Lindsay. I'm really excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you here. We were just chatting before we started recording that it's been, I think, about 2 years since we worked together. But I feel like we're on the same wavelength because folks can't see this, but we're wearing the same color today. We're twinsies today.
We are. We're matching.
So, Jessica, coming into our time together today, what do you want to spend some time on? What do you want to explore?
So I was thinking a lot about this, and I remember when I first became interested in your program, the Money Skills for Therapists, part of how you would introduce yourself was a lover of spreadsheets. And I can identify with that. But once I started the coaching program and things were getting real and there were feelings, I tried to say like, oh, I'm just here for the spreadsheets. I don't have any psychological work to do. And I learned that that wasn't true. I had some work. So when I first was thinking about what can I use this coaching call for and pick your brain about, my first thought was something spreadsheet related. And then I thought, why don't I not fall back into that? Why don't we really get into some other stuff? So I want to talk about fee raises and what my journey has been like and where I'm getting stuck and where to go next.
Okay. So tell me a little bit then about your fee raising journey and where you're stuck now.
So originally I had an insurance-based practice, and as I depaneled, my sliding scale has been pretty slippery. So I had some people that I kept at the rate of their copay. I had some people that I kept at the rate that their insurance had been reimbursing me. And then as I got new people, I was having them come in at my full fee, and I've continued to raise my full fee. Every time I make a big investment in my business, I tend to raise what my full fee is, but I usually only have it for new clients. And so I've got a pretty significant range of what people are paying.
Mm-hmm. And what is that range? Like if somebody paying you for a copay, what is that fee?
So when I look at numbers, I've got 18 people paying between $175 and $220. I've got 9 people paying below $150 in a range truly from zero to $150. And then I recently raised my fee to $275. And so I have 2 people now at that rate.
That's range.
That's a big range.
Yes. Okay.
It's a complicated spreadsheet.
I bet it is. I bet it's beautiful. And I have mad respect for it. And also, it tells a very interesting story, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So tell me then more about the emotions that have gone into creating this like huge range on these fees. What has made it so that you have some folks who are on their copay and some folks who are less than 150 or at zero? Yeah. Tell me more about the feelings that are happening here.
I think there is guilt that comes up for me when I think about clients that maybe I perceive would not be able to continue working with me, but I feel like this is maybe a little bit of my ego, but like I am the best fit for them. And so I actually have had some people who did transition to other therapists who accept their insurance and then come back. Mm-hmm. And oh, I guess the other thing with this is my caseload is bigger than I would like it to be because I have people who I'm seeing monthly, which they identify as for financial reasons.
All right. So this is where we're starting. We're starting with kind of like a very larger caseload than you want, huge range on people. I'm hearing this kind of narrative of like, these folks need to see you. You're the best for them in, you know, with their circumstances. What do you want your practice to actually look like?
I want to be able to show up to each session with my whole heart and know the stories that my clients are coming in with. Since I specialize in infertility, I want to know each person's journey and what it means to them and what language they use. And it's a lot of stories to hold. And so when my caseload is bigger than it should be, I feel like I can't show up with my best self.
So there's a cost there.
I mean, so many of my clients will talk about feeling like just a number at their fertility clinic.
Right.
And I don't want anybody to feel like just a number to me.
Right. Yes. Okay. So, you know, if we were to think about what your practice would actually look like, what is the amount of stories that you can really hold and like show up wholeheartedly each week? How many sessions a week is that amount for you?
My sessions per week, I think, is probably in that 15 to 18 range.
Okay.
It gets harder when I'm seeing some people less regularly, like monthly, because that doesn't mean 15 to 18 clients. That actually looks...
Yes.
Yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, what's harder about it? Like the monthly, is it the logistics of how the schedule is structured? Or is it emotionally harder?
Sometimes it's logistics. I think other times it's emotionally harder, where it's just more stories that I really need to make sure that I'm holding in my brain of what each person's work looks like.
I want to pause for just a moment, because if you're listening to this podcast, there's a really good chance you care deeply about the work you do, but the financial side of private practice still feels stressful. And honestly, that makes complete sense. As therapists and health practitioners, we were never taught this stuff. But there's something I want you to know. Financial skills are totally learnable. And learning them is one of the most powerful ways you can take care of yourself so that you can continue to show up for and take care of others. That's why I host free live workshops every month, designed specifically for private practice owners who feel stuck, whether it's mindset blocks, avoidance, or the technical side of managing money. In just 1 hour together, you'll gain clarity, practical strategies, and next steps to move forward with intention. Head to moneyskillsfortherapist.com/workshops today. That's moneyskillsfortherapist.com/workshops to see what's coming up and register to join us live or get the replay. I'd love to see you there. Yeah, and I mean, this work is really vulnerable work that you're doing with people. And as you say, like when they're engaging with you, at the same time, they're engaging with a system that can be very depersonalizing, right? Where, yeah, as you say, they feel like just a number. So I'm hearing that there's a values piece here and something specific about the folks that you're working with that you need to be able to hold their stories with real clarity so that they get a different experience with you, like a wholly different experience, a healing experience compared to what they're experiencing with the system they're navigating.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's an important piece here of how you want to be doing your work. Okay. The range of 15 to 18, Jessica, I'm going to challenge you a little bit to become more specific. 15 to 18, what does that actually look like? Is there a maximum amount of sessions per day? Are there certain times a day you shouldn't be working? Like, how do we set up your week so that you're really showing up as your best?
Ideally, I think it would be 4 a day.
Over how many days?
Right now, I have several part days. Like, I work Monday and Tuesday afternoon. Monday mornings, I usually have to myself. Tuesday mornings, I have with my daughter. And then Friday afternoons, I say are supposed to be for myself, but I usually end up working or doing administrative things.
Okay.
And then Wednesday and Thursday are my full days.
Okay. And do you like having those full, like those half days and full days?
I do. I think it paces me well.
Okay. So then I'm hearing Monday and Tuesday are half days. And then Wednesday and Thursday are full days. Did I catch that?
Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, if I'm thinking about it, I would probably want to do maybe 2 or 3 on those half days and 4 on those full days. Whereas right now, it might be 2 or 3 on those half days, but my full days are 5, sometimes 6.
Yes. And I'm curious for you, that 5th or 6th session, do you notice that there's like a decrease in quality as your sessions go on throughout the day? Like, I'm asking this from a personal place. Like, I used to notice for myself, 4 sessions I could do, I was tired. 5th session killed me. I'm curious for you, like, is there a drop dead point like that where you know that there's actually like a hard limit where you wouldn't want to go over 4 because 5 or 6 is actually detrimental? Or is there some flexibility there? How hard is that line?
I used to do more than 6. And so I absolutely recognize I am not the best therapist after 6 sessions.
Okay.
I feel like I can mostly hold my own at 6, but it definitely takes a larger toll on me.
Okay. So 4 would be much more spacious.
I think so.
Compared to what you have been. Okay. And then Friday, if we say, is Friday morning also, would that also be a working day? And then Friday afternoon is for you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Friday 2 to 3. I'm writing this down. If this wasn't a podcast, you and I would be spreadsheeting, but spreadsheets and podcasts, unfortunately, are not really friends. So if I look at Monday and Tuesday and Friday being half days, 2 to 3, so that would be like 6 to 9 clients in those times. And then Wednesday, Thursday would be 8. So that gives us 17 spots, right? If you have like 3 client spots each half day, but maybe you don't always fill them, but then 4 clients max Wednesday and Thursday, there's 17 spaces available in that week. How does that number sit with you being distributed out that way?
I like that.
What do you notice in your body thinking about that structure of schedule?
I think it would just be so much easier to plan around all the things that I want to do and how I like to organize my time.
Yes. Because, you know, as I'm thinking about this, sometimes something that I do with folks, Jessica, is like a schedule plan where you can really visualize, like, these are my client spots. We do it in a spreadsheet, of course. I don't have to tell you how to do it. You'd be able to figure it out, no problem. But like thinking about time batching, right? Where it's like, okay, we make a schedule in a spreadsheet. It's like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Monday morning, you know, you've got the hours marked, but like we have that blocked. Tuesday morning is blocked. It's daughter time. But then we show the spots so that we can like really see the flow of the sessions over time. And that's something that I would encourage you to play with, because what I'm kind of hearing right now with these monthly people too is your schedule really variable? Like, do you have folks on regular appointment slots, or are folks kind of booking into spots that are available? Tell me how you're managing this schedule.
Most people are regular.
Beautiful.
That I have either weekly or every other week at the same time. I have maybe 4 or 5 people that usually I'll end up throwing them in on a Friday or a Monday. So sometimes I lose those half days.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Because what I'm thinking is you would be able to map this out to see, okay, this is, I always have the same person Tuesday at 2. So week 1, week 2, there's always her. But then this is a spot that's maybe like a monthly spot where it's like, if somebody wants a monthly spot, then I do monthlies on Mondays at 4, right? And that's like the monthly spot so that there isn't this like leaking over into other time.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like the leakage is happening.
Yeah. And that's where I end up having like 5 or 6 on a full day when I don't want that.
Yes. Okay. So now we've kind of come down to, you know, a structure of schedule that seems like it's more spacious for you. Like, I'm curious, if we think about this schedule and you actually sticking to the schedule of having like 2 to 3 people on those half days, no more than 4 on the full days, not leaking into that time, like protecting your time for yourself on those Friday afternoons, like, what do you notice in your body thinking about this schedule structure?
So where I get really tripped up is everything can make sense to me.
Uh-huh.
Perfect sense to me. So logical, so rational.
So logical.
But beautiful. Then when it comes to actually doing something differently and having a conversation, I backtrack. And I think, well, I don't actually need that Friday afternoon. I think I do, but I don't really need it.
Yeah, right. Therefore, the massive fee range that we're talking about, because it sounds like there's lots of those hard conversations.
Yeah.
Are, you know, best avoided.
Right. But I avoid them in this way of like, well, I don't actually need that.
Yes. Okay.
I'm fine.
Okay. Yes. So tell me about that. Tell me about the part of you that's like, Jessica doesn't actually need Friday afternoons. She doesn't actually need to only see 4 people a day. Tell me about that part.
What I've been learning a lot about myself is that I can look like I'm putting the oxygen mask on myself first. And in some ways I am, but I've also simultaneously convinced myself that I don't need as much oxygen as other people.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. And tell me more about like, why do you not need as much oxygen as other people? What is that narrative?
That if I take more than I should, it will harm other people and be unfair. And I can go without.
Okay. If you take more than you should, it will harm other people. It'll be unfair. So you can go without.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know where that comes from?
Sounds like a familiar narrative in other areas of my life. So yeah, I think I can trace that back to some stories.
Okay. I mean, like putting that perspective on it, and we don't have to get into, you know, right into it here, but knowing where that came from, I'm curious, like, are you able to take a couple steps back from that story and where it came from? Can we put a little bit of perspective on it?
Yeah, I think my tendency to preserve or prioritize a relationship with somebody else to my own detriment.
Yes.
It shows up in a lot of areas of my life.
Right.
And that's exactly what I'm doing here.
And tell me more about like the cost of that. What does that cost you, preserving relationships at all costs? Or to your own detriment, at least.
It does have a cost. Like, I want to pretend it doesn't, but it does. It makes it harder for me to feel like me or to even know what I want. You know, if I'm not taking the time to be curious with what I want because I'm so busy prioritizing what other people want, how do I even know?
Yeah, I'm hearing there's a disconnection with self there.
I think so. Especially when I think about money stuff or what to give myself permission to have.
Yeah. Cause there's 2 aspects to this, at least. You know, we started by talking about the money, about the fees and this huge range of fees and not really owning, you know, $275 is your fee, and yet you have folks that you're seeing at $175, you have folks you're seeing at $150, you have folks you're seeing at $0. Right. So there's this huge range there, which I think is indicative of not like owning your financial needs. And then there's another piece here of not owning, I think, energetic needs, right? Which is like, you can't actually see 6 clients a day and, you know, have that be without a cost, right? And like, yeah, you're leaking into the time that you're telling you yourself that you need to put aside. So there's a lack of owning financial needs. And there's also a difficulty owning energetic needs coming up in your private practice. What do you notice talking about this? What's coming up?
It's this part that I can do. And then whenever I'm supposed to actually take the action on it, it's immediately I'm withdrawing, I'm avoiding, I'm taking back what I don't need.
Okay. So that withdrawing, avoiding that comes up next. So there's clarity, there's insight. You're like, yeah, okay.
Doing I do that need thing to do again. This. There
uh-huh,
it is.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But then when you go to action on it, I'm hearing then there's going to be like withdrawing and avoiding.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the withdrawing and avoiding.
To actually have the conversations with some of my clients or potential new clients. This is a change that I'm making. I feel guilty. And that feels so uncomfortable.
So guilt is an emotion that indicates that we are going against our values, right? We're doing something that's not aligned with values. That's what guilt is usually trying to tell us. So tell me, what values would you be going against if you are telling people that you're making this schedule change or that you're changing your fee structure and their fees are going to be increasing?
Maybe some of that is the therapist training of be accessible and serve and help the needy.
And what do you think about that training that we get about accessibility and serving and helping the needy?
I think there's more than one way to be accessible. I think that when people are doing really good therapeutic work, it allows them to be the best version of themselves, which lifts up the other people in their lives and actually helps us make more changes in the world, because otherwise we are too burnt out and exhausted to fight to make the world better, to actually help the needy.
Yeah, I'm hearing like a quality over quantity.
Mm-hmm.
Like the quality of the work is very important, not just the amount of work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And when you think about that piece that you just talked about, you know, being able to actually like show up and do our best work and make changes, what comes up for you there energetically?
I can see it, that I could do higher quality work with more energy and even bringing in more money into my business, that I can take better care of myself and invest in even more consultation and supervision and trainings.
Right. You could do the work better.
Yeah.
Because I will say, you know, that like your target folks that you support, like folks with infertility, I would have been your target market at one point, right? Like going through infertility myself and going through pregnancy losses myself. And what I needed at that time, which I didn't find at the time I really needed it, to be clear, is I needed somebody who really got it, who could show up and really see me and my story and be curious about like the parts of me that were coming out in this. And as you say, like not feel like a number. And I'll tell you, at that point, I was paying so much fucking money for fertility that clinical fees are nothing compared to the kind of like, I'm like, how many tens of thousands are we talking? Like that's, you know, when we're doing fertility treatments, that's the kind of scale. So I do remember when I was looking at therapists, like I didn't care how much they charged, because if they could help me navigate this hellscape of both like the loss and also the medical system, that was incredibly valuable to me going through that experience. And I had already committed a lot of money. Like I was in it financially. Money was not the pain point, right? But what I needed was somebody who could really be present with me and really get it. What do you notice like hearing that? Yeah.
I think that's exactly what I experience with these clients. And
yeah.
And to the point that some of them would rather see me once a month than make a change. But then it leads back to my caseload problem and schedule problem.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Let me challenge you a little bit on that. So I'm hearing that what I'm seeing is this. Folks are going to make their own financial decisions. You have people on your caseload who are saying to you, what you do is so valuable to me that I will see you once a month, which is all I can afford, but I'm going to commit to like working with you once a month, which is what I can afford to show up and get the value of what you do, because that 1 hour a month is having a huge positive impact for them, right? So they're making a financial choice there to keep paying you. Is this folks who are on like the $275?
No.
Or $225?
No, my newer people are
yes. Okay.
Weekly. I have some okay. 175s.
Who do monthly?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, folks are making their own financial choices there. We can talk in a second about whether monthly is even an interval that maybe you're able to do. But I'm devil's advocating you here, okay? If you raise your fee, you're going to have people make decisions to maybe come a little bit less, but they're going to show up wholeheartedly to those sessions because they're like, I see Jessica twice a month. I'm not going to catch her up with the drama with my mom.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to talk exactly about what I'm here for, mm-hmm. because I'm paying $275 for this session and I'm only going to see her twice this month. So it's like people show up at a higher level when it's actually an investment for them too. right? And so a scenario that I see happening is by asking for the fee that you actually want and need, your schedule is also possibly going to actually rearrange itself so that you are making more, seeing less clients, doing higher quality work.
That by having these conversations, they'll make better use of some of this time.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, I can think of a few people that I think that okay. would be what happens. People know they're not getting a surface level, superficial therapy session with me. So I would
yes.
say
yes.
They tend yes. to bring their stories. But I would feel the same way if I were, with my own therapy. The higher the investment, the more mm-hmm. I'm gonna.
Yeah, I'm not gonna dawdle
nope.
if I'm paying $300 nope. for this hour with you.
Nope.
I'm gonna like be like, here is my list. I want to talk about this thing I said last time, and like you know, so yeah, you are asking folks to, or you're making it so folks will show up at that higher level, right? So you're able to bring more of yourself, but they're also gonna bring more of themselves. When they're paying a fee that really is recognizing the value of what's happening in that room between you with your very specific expertise and your personal experience with which you can help them navigate this extremely difficult time that they're experiencing. And again, they're already paying a bajillion dollars, to be clear, for what they're experiencing. Okay, so how convinced are you that this could actually, like these things could actually go together, that a fee raise and a schedule shift could actually be something that kind of like one leads to the other naturally.
Maybe then there's also some scarcity mindset coming in then of what if some of these people, then they drop. But it's still, it's a financial decision that they do get to make. And I feel like
they do.
I know what I do is valuable and I know that I'm good at it. And I know that new clients will continue to come. And it is okay if somebody I've been working with for a while makes a financial decision.
Yeah.
That means that I'm not working with them anymore.
Yes. What are you noticing now? What's coming up?
I underestimate myself, but even though these conversations are so uncomfortable and they do bring up guilt, that me continuing to fall into those protect, preserve all relationships at all costs, yeah, it's not good for me. And maybe it's disempowering to them too.
Yes. My instinct here is to like amplify the pain a little bit. So forgive me for what I'm about to do. But if you think about the cost right now clinically of what is happening when you're tired and you're seeing too many clients or you're seeing them in time that's supposed to be your time, right? You're seeing that Friday afternoon client that you've squeezed into the week because you, you know, didn't want to say no, but you're actually tired and maybe your brain is not totally there. Like, what is the cost energetically or clinically of you overstretching yourself like that?
I think clinically, maybe I lose perspective on my end goal, my real end goal with these clients, because yes, I'm an infertility therapist. I don't actually care if my clients get pregnant. I care if they like themselves. I care if they like their bodies. And when I'm not coming in with that clarity, I might be more likely to move into some problem solving that we don't need to be in, because I have brilliant clients who know exactly what they should be doing and who to talk to. And the whole world is giving them fertility advice.
Of course.
I'm not that person. Like I'm the person that can ask them how they think and what they feel. And I had someone recently tell me, you know, she thought if they didn't get enough eggs coming from her next retrieval, she wasn't even sure she wanted to wake up. And I was able to meet her in that moment and tell her, I don't care how many eggs they get. I care about you. You know, she's not just a patient. She's a human. She's a full human.
And that I'm hearing is when you're operating from your center, like when you're grounded, you know, that's what you're bringing to therapy.
Their worth is not tied to their reproductive outcomes.
Yes.
And their reproductive
yes.
outcomes don't change how I see them or view them at all.
And that you're offering them when you're in your best self, when you're having those grounded sessions, is way more valuable than any fertility advice or problem solving that your tired brain might want to do. What if the commitment is to create a practice and a schedule that has you doing that every session of the week?
uh-oh, Lindsay, that's even less than my 17 sessions a week. Oh, no.
I figured. That's why I was pushing you a little bit with this, like, you know, 15 to 18. I'm like, okay, but what is it really? What is that real number? How many times a week can you actually be that present with your clients? How many sessions is your actual limit?
Yeah, we're probably talking like 2 a day.
Yeah. Okay. 2 a day. Okay.
Yeah. To fully know that I'm with them on their story and their belief system and their narrative.
Yeah.
And their relationship to their body.
Okay. Okay. So that's 10 a week. It's kind of like every day would be like a half day in terms of your clinical schedule.
But I don't really need that much time to myself.
Well, what this is why I'm focusing on them, right? Like, there's a part of you I'm hearing that is self-denying. You know, I'm not going to be able to help you, like, crack that in, you know, our 25 minutes that we had together today. This is why I'm amplifying. Like, there's a part of you that's very committed to serving others, right? Like, that therapist part of you, there's going to be other parts of you that are invested in this. And what I find is when we have that really strong caretaking orientation, sometimes before we can get to the point of being like, I deserve, I need this, I am worthy, we can at least leverage that tendency to still make good decisions. So it's like, I'm hearing, you know, you really want to show up really grounded and really present for your clients, right? And give them that completely different experience than what they're getting in a medical model where they're just being like pushed through a, like a, you know, factory farm experience, mm-hmm. right? If you're really honest with yourself, for you to really do that, you can do that 10 times a week. Okay. This is like, you know, this would be like the optimal, your optimal practice. You're seeing 10 times clients a week. It doesn't mean that you have to do that tomorrow. But if we're honest, that's the amount of times that you can really bring that quality of energy in a week, right? Beyond that, you're starting to like get a little more stretched. So my curiosity is like, would the financials of that actually work? Is that actually workable? I'm just going to do some really quick math here, Jessica. I know you don't need me to math because you're a spreadsheet queen yourself, but we're just going to play for one quick second. Your high range right now is $275 a session, right? 10 sessions a week. I'm going to make that times 46 weeks in a year, assuming you're not working about six. And then I'm going to divide that by 12. It would make your monthly average revenue about $10,500 a month. How does that number sit with you? This is revenue.
Yeah.
You know, you would run this through your profit first calculator or however you want to disperse your money. $10,500. Seeing 10 clients a week.
I would want higher.
Okay. How much higher do you need or want?
If I can be closer to 13 mm-hmm. a month.
Okay. So 13,000. Okay. So we're looking at 156,000 revenue would be the goal for the year. If I divide that by 46, that's how much you need to make a week. If I divide that by 275, we're looking at 12 sessions a week, 12.3. So let's say 12 sessions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could always go a little higher. But what if your practice was 12 sessions a week at 275 a sessions? How does that sit with you energetically?
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
12 sessions a week, and you can, you know, think about how you want to space that out. Because like a 10 is optimal. Like I said, 10 would be like, in the best world, you would only do 10. 12, I think your quality would still be very high.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
But you're doing 12 a week instead of the 15 to 18 that we started talking about. What do you notice in your body thinking about 12?
I think the bark would be so rich and so powerful.
Okay.
And energizing for me. Like I would walk away knowing something really powerful and beautiful happened in this session.
Okay. So for that part of you then that is really oriented in taking care of others, making sure you're helping people, has that part of you got the information that if you see 12 clients a week at 275, you'd be doing really incredible work for the people you're serving?
Yeah.
And how does that sit with that part?
I think that part I'm on board with, and I need to keep pushing my own pain points of when I actually think about the conversations to get there and the changes to get there. It is serving that value and that goal. I'm not betraying a value. I like what you said about guilt being something that says that we are not aligned with a value. And I am, and I want to be values aligned.
Yeah, because the flip side of that, this is before, long before I was a social worker, I did some pro-choice work, and this was something that I used to talk about on my helpline, where people would call in and be having to make a present, you know, an unplanned pregnancy decision, and what do they want to do? It's like, you know, guilt comes up, we're in violation of a value, but sometimes when guilt comes up and we really think it through, we realize that this isn't a violation of value. What I thought was the value is not actually my most important value in this situation, right? So there's guilt for the part that wants to take care of everybody. But if we actually think about like what is impactful work and the quality of the work, this is actually moving you in the direction of your truer value, which is about giving people what they really need during their fertility and like infertility experience, which is somebody who really is present.
Yeah. And I, you know, I'm thinking about all these other ideas that I have that might be my number for that really powerful, beautiful clinical work. But there's so much advocacy that needs to be done in the world of infertility and helping providers be more educated and trauma-informed, helping therapists who might not know how to sit with a client, making a choice, like the ones that you were talking about, you know, being pro-choice is like so essential to my work. Yeah. And I would love to be doing some of that too, because I do have time and energy.
Yes.
Especially if I am seeing fewer people.
Yeah. At 12 clients, you can be doing incredible work and you have time to start doing education for providers, to do advocacy work, to reach people in maybe more scaled, accessible ways. Like it actually frees you up to have a bigger impact in all these other areas.
Yeah. And that's exciting to think about.
Yeah. So Jessica, coming to the end of our conversation today, what are you taking away?
I am aligned with my values and I can tolerate some discomfort. If I'm feeling guilty and uncomfortable, and I'm not going to be able to have 9 of these conversations in a week, but I can probably, you know, if I'm thinking I'd love to do 1 a month, I think that I can actually do even more than that. Mm-hmm.
And it might also just be an area too, where now that you have like the game plan, this might be something that you bring on some support to help you like make that change. Like whether it's you work with a coach to actually like keep you accountable. I'm wondering too, like what supports do you bring on board to help you actually stick with this plan so that you can get to the other side and have that extra energy to actually have a much bigger impact on, you know, the infertility world?
Yeah, I could see that being something that maybe I bring more into my own therapy or look into coaching.
Yes. Jessica, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Lindsay, thank you. This was so helpful. I knew it would be.
I really appreciate it. It's like so helpful for everybody when we have these honest conversations. So I appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
I so appreciate Jessica coming on the podcast today to talk through this piece with me, you know, this question about fees and schedule and having a really hard time doing anything that might end a relationship. I'm sure many folks listening can relate to, you know, that showing up in your practice and in different ways. You know, and the conversation with Jessica, something that it really brings to the surface for me is owning the fact that there's only so much good work we can do, right? Especially if you're really talented and you love your niche and you've really honed your skills. It's tempting to just want to like kind of max out our schedules and see lots of people. And of course, that's a way too, to make your numbers higher in the short term. But there's only so much really, really solid work we can do in a week. And it doesn't mean that the other sessions that you're doing are not great, but you know when you're not bringing your A game. So I'm going to encourage you to think about your own schedule and think, have you structured your schedule in such a way? You know, are you seeing the amount of clients and seeing them at the times of day? Do you have your right maximum set on daily appointments so you're really doing your best work? Or is there a certain, you know, time of the day where you notice that your work is not so good, or where you notice that you're pushing in sessions that ends up costing you in other ways and that you're not showing up the best in your work? You know, as a different kind of example, I realized when I was in private practice that the sessions I did like after 4 p.m. were just not as good. And people wanted, you know, end of the day sessions, they wanted that 5 p.m. session. But my brain works in such a way that, you know, as I like to joke, I get dumber as the day goes on. So you don't want that last session of the day with me. You know, even if you want that after work session, it's not gonna be as good as the session I'm gonna give you at 2 in the afternoon, right? So really owning our individual needs in terms of how we deliver our best work is in service to our clients because they want to have a really good session with you. They don't want you just like sitting across from them, you know, nodding, having your tired brain trying to do the best that it can. They want your A game, right? So how can you set up your private practice so you can bring your A game and do incredible work with people that changes their lives? So they're getting in 15 sessions with you the kind of changes that they would have to do 40 sessions with somebody else to receive. Because also, the math is better on that. People will end up getting more value for therapy if you're doing better work with them in less sessions, right? So the quality over quantity, I think, should not be underestimated when we think about how we want to set up our private practices. Thanks so much again to Jessica for coming on the podcast today. And thank you so much for joining me today. I'm Lindsay Bonham, a therapist turned money coach and the creator of Money Skills for Therapists. If you are ready to feel more calm and confident about your finances, you should definitely attend one of my free upcoming workshops. Whether it's about saving enough for taxes, creating stability in your practice, overcoming money shame, or building a practice that takes care of you, I'm bringing you a variety of workshop topics to help you shift your relationship with money and get your private practice finances working for you. Register today using the link in the show notes or go to moneyskillsfortherapists.com/workshops. I look forward to supporting you.